Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We are covering one of the classic films today from the 2000s, 2001's Training Day. Is it the most overrated film in Denzel's catalog? Is it the most underrated Oscar-winning performance of all time? Find out with us today as we break down Training Day. We'll see you guys in just one
Welcome
second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! Oh, yeah. Shit! This is just sex right now.
This is The Office.
The beat will drop now.
This is Action Movie Anatomy.
For those of you on audio, we're dancing like jackasses.
Neither of us can dance.
This is Action Movie Anatomy, guys. Welcome to the show. This is Training Day. If you have been listening to me complain about Antoine Fuqua for 70 episodes, then you have been waiting for us to do Training Day.
Yeah.
It's finally here. Guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy, the only movie show on the Popcorn Talk Network talking about action movies each and every single week. The Popcorn Talk, of course, is the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. I'm your host, Ben Bateman. Across the table from me is Mr. Andrew Guy.
Hey, everybody. How's it going today? I get a slow clap. I get a golf slow clap.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what you got.
I'll take it. I am so excited to talk about this movie because I feel like this movie has like a half-life of a year, and it slowly just goes down every year in people's eyes of how good it actually is.
This movie, to me, is sort of a hilarious example of like, so we're the same age, which means this movie came out when we were 13 years old.
Yeah.
Talk about a movie that when you see this movie as a 13-year-old...
It is the coolest thing.
The coolest. This was the only movie that anybody in my school talked about the whole year. He won the Oscar, so we were all convinced...
This album had literally come out the year before.
Yeah, and it's a great album. Yep. I know every word to every song on this album to this day.
Yep.
To this day.
You guys want me to just play this on repeat the whole show?
Yeah. Got Mr. Stephen Lemieux in the booth, the executive producer of the Popcorn Talk Network. Stephen, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm pretty good. I just want to listen to the song like all day.
It's a good one.
This song, whenever it comes on, I'm very excited.
I still think it's great.
It's excellent.
I remember the music video distinctly. Yeah, I do.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, it's a huge one. Guys, if you want to follow along with the show or either of us, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media. You can find the show at AMA Podcast.
And you can find me at Andrew Guy, all on Twitter.
And we've been getting wonderful, wonderful feedback. In fact, Stephen or Andrew, don't let me forget to reference. We were written up in a blog this last week. One of our fans shouted us out. I just read the post last night, her 10 favorite movie podcasts. And she wrote a paragraph about each one. And we were one of them.
Yeah.
She like chronicled our show in her review. I was just blown away.
It was incredibly accurate, except for she said that one of the guys does good impersonations, which I really think if you watch the show carefully, I think both of us actually do pretty great impersonations, but that is neither here nor there. That was an excellent review.
And I'd like to find the shout out and give it before the end of the show. So, yeah. Guys, today's movie is Training Day. We do action movies on this show. The action movies, we cover adhere to four basic rules. Aside from the sort of arbitrary rule of being made after 1981, which is kind of like a half rule. Mm-hmm. Rule number one, the hero is always plays by his own rules.
Yeah, well, it's really tough because in this situation, the hero does play by his own rules because the hero is Ethan Hawke. So we can just move right on to the next one.
Rule number two, the villain and the hero are always the smartest people in the room.
This is where I think we slip a little bit. I don't actually think that Ethan Hawke is the smartest person in the room. I think he is the most noble, just person in the room. And through that,
right,
he succeeds, not through his intelligence.
Yeah, but in the end, he outsmarts the big bad guy.
He does, and he
gets the win. So I think to that end, like, I think he is. Because who is smarter than him as a hero in the movie?
No one. Denzel is smarter than him as a villain, I think.
Because they're the two smartest.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. That is rule number three, and they're both police officers. Yep. This is like a movie built for it. And rule number four, there is at least one explosion. Is there an explosion in this movie?
Is there an explosion?
I don't think so.
His apartment doesn't explode. The car doesn't explode when it's shot.
Now there's like some gunfights.
Maybe there is no explosion
shotguns.
In this film.
Shotguns. I don't think there's anything that blows up in this movie. I really don't think. Like, that seems like it would turn this into more of an action movie than it is.
Yeah.
It's a little closer to a drama in most parts.
Yeah, no, there is no explosion in this film. And guys, if we're wrong, please get at us in the live chat. But yes.
It has gunfights, though, so it's definitely an action movie.
Yes, it does have gunfights. Yeah.
So those are the four rules that we usually stick to when we do this show. There are other things that we like to reference, and we'll reference them throughout the show. So let's move on to our first bit of business on the show. And that's what we start with, which is we like to start by showing the trailer and going from there. So let's watch the trailer for 2001's Training Day, Antoine Fuqua's masterpiece.
It is his masterpiece.
I got excited when I turned it on last night.
Training Day?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I hadn't watched it since
the next
theaters.
24 hours.
Ooh, this is definitely an 01 trailer.
Yes, it is.
You'll learn about the streets.
As a slave.
About
the choices that will force a dedicated cop over the edge. All in the name of good.
There's not one moment where you think he's a dedicated cop.
In the next 24 hours, the only thing more dangerous than the line being crossed
is crossing the line.
Good chance to give you a little taste of reality. You think you can handle it?
Is the cop who has crossed it.
I will do anything you want me to do.
Will you? Let's see.
Smoke this crack right here.
Smoke this crack.
If I was a dealer, you'd be dead by now.
Oh, and oh, rap superstar.
Yes.
Judges have handed out over 15,000 man years
Cypress Hill?
Of
yeah.
Time
this was off of their big album that year. They had their comeback album, kind of.
Today and today only to show me who and what you're made of. You hear me?
The last thing I think they put out that was relevant at all.
Oh, yeah.
First day on the job, you hit a $3 million seizure.
$4 million.
Officer, get away from the girl!
No. We're not racking up arrests today.
You let him go.
What more you want?
I want justice, right?
Is that not justice?
That's street justice.
What's wrong with street justice?
Oh, what? Just let the animals wipe themselves out.
God willing.
You can't be like this.
Open your eyes. Can't you see?
Police, we got a search warrant.
This is not a good trailer.
Police. Bad trailer. That's Macy Gray, did you know
yes,
that?
Yes, I did.
You think I'm crazy, right? We communicate and talk to me, say it. Say it.
They could have just used Denzel being sweet so much more effectively.
Absolutely.
A lot of things on these streets, boy. Good things and bad things, too.
There's some profoundly evil people walking the streets freely right now.
I'm the police! King Kong ain't got nothing on me!
And, like, you go from nothing to the best line in the movie?
Yeah.
You know? Or, you know, what people...
Yeah.
It's gonna have to be a nice day, huh? It'll get dark. Guarantee you that.
That is an awful trailer.
It should have started with them sitting in the coffee shop and him being like, tell me a story.
Yeah, right?
You know, and going right into that. And then, like, hit real quick, him, like, clipping his guns together. Yeah. And then you're kind of like, wait, what's the deal with this guy? And then they get in the car. Should have been much more about just the two of their relationship.
Yeah, definitely. That's a bad trailer.
Yeah.
But a good movie, or is it? we will continue moving through the show, guys. So let's start off with our big, bold thought about the film. We like to start the show off with this called thesis statement. Mm-hmm. So thesis statement is that thing. You're watching a movie. You really believe something about it to be absolutely the truest, boldest sort of like, this is that thing that you really think about, you cling to. It's a point you want to make when you talk about the movie.
Yeah.
It should be almost like rooted in hyperbole. That point that you want to make to the guy at the party when you're two drinks deep and he brings up your movie that you love talking about, mm-hmm. the thing you go to. That's your thesis statement.
Yeah, if you could say only one thing in a drunken debate at a party about this film, this is what you would say.
You want to, like, drop the mic after this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to jump in with mine first, and I'm going to say that...
I think we have both very good thesis statements this week.
Training Day is to the 2000s what Scarface is to the 1980s. Now, the similarities are outrageous.
Two of your favorite directors.
I hate Antoine Fuqua not as much as I hate Brian De Palma, even though Brian De Palma is a far more talented director.
Yeah.
They are both centered around iconic, memorable, award-worthy performances by great, great, great actors.
Yes.
With some decent secondary characters. Training Day has a much better secondary character than Scarface does. And just a bunch of, like, mostly stylized, forgettable stuff that is very, very aged
cliche,
in retrospect. Stereotypical.
Super
cliche, stereotypical cartoonish.
Borderline racist.
Completely. When you go back and watch Scarface... moments in that movie are unwatchably 80s. Just watching this movie, moments of this movie are unwatchably 2001. Like, things that you thought were cool as a 13-year-old just seem so silly and cartoonish now.
And I also wonder what it was like for people that grew up in L.A. watching that movie. Because you grew up in Washington and I grew up in Oregon, which is about two of the farthest places from Los Angeles, central Los Angeles, like gangland Los Angeles. So for us to watch this stuff, not only did we have no point of reference, but we were also 13.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, I just like everybody, Denzel was the coolest thing on earth when this came
out. And
he still is. And he is far and away the best part of this movie. Now, again, looking back, as good as he was, I am hard pressed to believe Ethan Hawke deserved an Oscar nomination for this movie. Like, he is very good in it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch this movie and come away with it being just like, oh my god, Ethan Hawke blew my mind. It's
right.
Like, this movie got a lot of press, and people thought it was better than it was for that reason. Is it entertaining? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Yes.
Am I happy to be talking about it? You fucking bet your ass I am. Is it a classic that deserves to be on the Oscar level of the movies that it gets put up against? Absolutely not. Is
Absolutely
Denzel
not.
At his best in this movie? maybe he's at his most Denzel. This is like watching Jack Nicholson when he's very Jack. This is so Denzel.
So is Training Day Denzel's Jerry Maguire to Tom Cruise? Is there a more Denzel? Because, like, you know, Remember the Titans is pretty Denzel, but it's in such a different type of... That's like noble, savage Denzel.
I can't comment.
Yeah, you can't, which is unbelievable to me. So this is... I'm going to actually keep my original thesis statement because I think it's funny.
Okay.
Because you pretty much just destroyed it in yours, saying that this is not a Denzel movie. This is an Ethan Hawke movie.
Okay. People.
And the reason that I say this is because you go back and you watch it again. It's been almost 2 decades since this movie came out.
Yeah.
You and I are much older than we were when originally. And yeah, like you said, when it came out, Denzel was the coolest thing in the world, and he still is. But watching this movie as a movie fan, as a critic, as a reviewer, whatever you want to call it, this movie is only good because of Ethan Hawke.
You think it would be silly if it was just like, you think that if he wasn't as good, Denzel would come off as like over the top?
Absolutely. I think that if you had an over the top villain in The Rock, that movie would be garbage because Nick Cage and Sean Connery are so much.
Yeah.
They need someone to ground them in reality. And
true.
I always talk about that in films. And I think that Ethan Hawke is what grounds Denzel into reality, giving him the Oscar nod. And I think that that takes a huge... I can't even imagine how hard it is to sit there and carry a scene with Denzel Washington. To try to carry it myself is almost impossible, but try to match his level seems just like the most intimidating thing in the world, especially playing that character.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the part of it, like when you're watching this movie, almost from the first frame, and this was the most interesting part I found. Even now, it's almost uncomfortable, the early scenes. They kind of make your skin crawl a little bit, because it's like... they're just long. They're these long scenes where, like, Denzel's, like, clearly such a villain, and, like, and Ethan Hawke is, like, such a little bitch.
Boy Scout, yeah.
And, like, he just...
what verbiage you want to use.
At the beginning, he just is, like, so soft, and, like, when he's, like, talking to him about his, like, having sex with his wife, it's just, like, really kind of uncomfortable.
See, I like all that stuff. I think it's, like, when he sits down in the cafe or the diner, and he's, like, he's just, like... he's so uncomfortable.
Oh, I don't think it's uncomfortable like it's a bad thing.
Oh, right. It's a good thing.
I think it's uncomfortable like it's very effective. That's the thing that I found the most impressive about it was like, all these years later, it's still just like a very effective tool to put such opposite characters. Anyway, so I think those are solid thesis statements. I like where they will drive this
episode. I'm so curious of what the audience thinks about both of our thesis statements and like whether they agree with ours or not.
Yeah, I mean, I am known on this show for having controversial opinions about both Brian De Palma and this movie. They're like two of the things that I get chastised for the most when I talk about movies with people is that people love Training Day, and I tend to think this movie is very overrated. However, as I said, I'm very excited to talk about it today.
Yes, let's move right along.
To fist pump moment. Fist pump moment is that moment in the movie, guys, when you're watching something happens, you're just like, fucking sweet. You look around, you're like, ah, this is great. I get to watch the rest of this movie. Are you guys seeing this right now? This is so awesome. And for me, I had two, but the one that really jumped out at me, and we talked before the show, and it was just clearly the
it's
moment.
It's the same. We have the same fist pump moment.
Yeah, it's the scene where they leave the diner. Which, by the way, is a diner that's used in, like, 5 different movies. Did you see that?
Yeah, it's used in a lot of movies.
It's called the Quality Cafe. It's the same diner used in Gone in 60 Seconds when he goes to meet his mom before he's going to save Kip. No, it's the same diner used in 7 when Morgan Freeman and Gwyneth Paltrow sit down. Mm-hmm. There was 2 other relevant examples that I wrote down as well, but I was surprised. It's just the same location. And it totally makes sense if you think about those locations. It feels like the same diner.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it's when they're leaving the diner.
Yeah.
And they're walking up to the car, and what does Ethan Hawke say? He's like, you didn't get this from the motor pool.
Yeah, Denzel's like, snatch that menu off the windshield for me. And he's like, okay, and they sit down in the car, and he's like, this definitely isn't from the motor pool. And like, she puts like glasses up on his nose. He's like, such a dweeb.
Right.
And Denzel just like cocks his gun. He's like, yeah, but it's sexy, ain't it? And you're like, oh God, this guy's sweet.
And then he's like, are we gonna go to the office?
Is it back at division? And he's like, you win it, baby. Going up. And he hits the hydraulics. and Still Dre comes on, and you're just like, oh my God. You're like, this is so sweet.
It's so sweet. Not only, like, for us, it's like getting in a time machine.
Yeah.
But then also sitting there and watching, you're just like, oh, like, you got black and white, night and day, good versus evil, and it's just like, here we go.
All of the reasons that, so one of my arguments for why this movie is sort of silly to me is like, This is the movie that like Chappelle's Show spoofed in the Wayne Brady sketch when he's talking about I didn't know you like to get wet, Dave. That's PCP
charm.
Yeah, and like it's the reason it's spoofed is because those scenes are so like over-the-top, ridiculous, stylized. He puts on fucking hydraulics and a 1979 Monte Carlo and starts playing, like, the most popular rap song at the time by Dr. Dre with, like, a giant gun and a huge silver
gigantic
chain.
Gigantic guns are just hanging out.
Yeah, it's outrageous. It's just amazing. And, like, that's the best part about this whole movie to me. That was my favorite scene.
Same, by far. There's that scene, and then, honestly, I really actually love the scene where Ethan Hawke is at the Mexican gangster's house.
Yeah.
'Cause that's what they're referred to as. I just think it's awesome because it is a little bit like, oh, of course, you know, like, oh, that's going to come back around, like getting saved because he has the
wall
of the girl.
My least favorite part of the whole movie. Hate that part.
Right, but I love it. I don't know why. I loved it. I think it's sweet when you get that moment where he's like, he pulls the wallet out and you're like, oh, here we go. That's like the 13-year-old kid in me being like, yeah.
And Cliff Curtis playing his 13th nationality.
Yeah, at least the 13th nationality. I love Cliff Curtis so much.
Huge fan. Huge fan.
He's not a very convincing Mexican.
Yeah, he does fine in this. He does fine in this. My other fist pump would be when Denzel just opens fire, and it's like the it's the slow mo of like the gun, the one straight gun and the one sideways gun that he's like pumping as though they need to move.
Yeah,
and like it's just like again, you're holding a fucking gun sideways. Like, why?
It's not how you shoot.
Yeah,
you know that. You're a cop.
Everything about this is just absurd, but it's just awesome.
That moment when they kill Scott Glenn,
yeah,
was like almost a fist pump for me because I remember sitting there watching that because. You know, I've seen this movie probably 5-6 times. They still do a really good job of building tension
in
this movie. And that scene with the gangsters at the dinner table, Fuqua had given all of them individual direction to just mess with Ethan Hawke. And that scene really is super tense. But the other one with Scott Glenn, where they're sitting there in the living room, as a kid, I remember when Denzel shot him.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God.
Like,
holy
so
shit.
Evil.
Yeah. He's like, he's your friend. Why? Because he knows my first name?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, damn. Hell no.
The thing about this movie, and people have been saying it for years, is it's almost like they wrote the movie for Denzel to win an Oscar. It's like a lot of it feels that way. If you think about the way the movie is set up, it's just scene after scene after scene for him to have these great monologues, to have these great tense scenes. It's just this hilarious, ridiculous arc, and
he speaks every language.
Yeah.
Which is great.
It's awesome. Denzel has gone on record numerous times saying this is his favorite role he's ever played.
Yeah.
It's just like, I think that's sort of funny when you watch the movie. You can throw most of the scenery away. It's mostly just about his big moments, his big scenes.
Yeah.
And he's awesome, obviously. Because, I mean, a lot of people think that he got the Oscar for this movie, not because of this movie, but because he had been passed over. The Hurricane was the big one that he should have won for just 2 years prior, I think.
And then this was the last Oscar nod he got until Flight for like 12 years separated, you know? Which is a perfect segue into our next conversation, which is the star profiles, where we always talk about the movies that these guys have done prior to this film. So speaking about Denzel, he did Remember the Titans in 2000, The Hurricane in 99, and The Bone Collector in 99.
Yeah.
Which, it's very interesting about the 90s, is you can do throwaway action movies and Academy Award-winning dramatics back-to-back, and no one blinks an eye or bats an eye, whereas that is not really as acceptable now in culture.
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore.
This was, he'd already won for Glory. He'd been nominated 3 or 4 times, I believe, already coming into this film.
Yeah, what would the
nominations? I think he has a total of 6 nominations and 2 wins, I believe.
Yeah, he won the supporting for Glory, and he won the lead for this. He also had a nomination for Malcolm X.
Hurricane
he also had a nomination
and
for Hurricane for Flight, and I think one more.
There is one more.
I believe it would be Cry Freedom.
That could be right.
1987. Steven, would you mind looking that up for us? Is that okay? Please.
What's the question again?
Was Denzel Washington nominated for a movie called Cry Freedom in 1987? Just his I guess his Academy Award nominations is what we're curious about.
Nominee Best Supporting Actor, Best Original Music Score for the movie 1988.
Cry Freedom. Yeah,
but the movie came out in 87.
87.
Okay, so yeah,
snap.
That's pretty good. We're pretty good at this.
Yeah, pretty good at this. It's like we do a show or something. So The Hurricane, which is awesome.
Very good film.
If people haven't seen that movie, that's one of my favorites. It's a really good movie.
And you love Flight as well.
I thought Flight was really good, to be honest.
I mean, he's just awesome in it. He's I wanted to kind of work this in somehow, and I didn't know how I was going to do it. I think this might be a good chance. Is when we've done any movie with Tony Scott and Denzel, it always talks about how Tony Scott uses Denzel as his muse. They're both at their best when they work together.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is that Tony Scott has Denzel play these faulted characters that at the end of the day are good people, but they're human. And they have like bad things about them, I guess, or, you know, weaknesses. He doesn't really have that characteristic in this film. There's nothing really noble about what he does.
Yeah.
And I think that might be a reason why Denzel is just not that good of a bad guy, maybe. Maybe he's just better when he's a good guy with mistakes about him.
You mean that's why he seems sort of cartoonish and silly in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Safe House, and like you said, I think he's a bad guy in that movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that
so
either.
I can't talk to him or speak about him as a villain in every film, but you look at him in Flight,
yeah,
and you look at him in this film, and I think Flight is such a better performance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's much more subtle, I guess, right? I don't think that he took this character and was like ridiculous. I think it's kind of more by nature of the way the movie's set up, and also like it's just like the way he's written. Like
it's just so weird because even reviews that came out at the time this film came out, and my favorite one is that Denzel is as straight as Beverly Hills is Ghetto.
Yeah,
and it's true. When you watch this film, that's not how people act that are like that.
No,
you know. It's very cartoonized and Hollywoodized.
Yeah, I mean, he's based off of a real guy.
Yeah.
He's based off a real guy. There was a whole entire internal investigation in the late 90s into something called Rampart. There's actually several movies about this. I think the movie Rampart with Woody Harrelson is about that as well.
Yeah.
But it's all like crooked cops, and it's all like this giant scandal with murders and theft and whatnot. He's based on a real guy. And the real guy had the beard. He wore the big gold chain. Mm-hmm. Like, he tried to base his performance and his what he looked like quite a bit on this guy. So I thought that was sort of interesting. That like you wonder if there was a real guy out there. Was he like this ostentatious and like
right.
charismatic and like, you know? I mean, that's in some ways like what gets him killed is like he is this just like this big dude with the guns and the chain.
He's just
like,
got a short fuse. He gets himself in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, okay, so let's hop over to Ethan Hawke and talk about his career, because Ethan Hawke is one of the most interesting,
yeah.
maybe underrated actors of our time.
Yeah, he stays under the radar, that's for damn sure.
And so in 2000, he did Hamlet. In 2001, he did Waking Life, which is that animated Richard Linklater movie that is people love that movie.
Yep, yep.
And then Tape in 2001, which I don't know what that was.
We looked up Tape at one point for somebody else. I think that it's Uma Thurman maybe in Tape, because I think she
Makes
was in
sense.
Tape directly before she was in Kill Bill.
Okay.
I want to say. I think that it's Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke. So I don't know much about these movies.
I think I've seen Waking Life.
I've seen Waking Life. And I never saw Hamlet.
I did. It's Hamlet.
You know?
I've seen 10,000 variations of Hamlet. There's not a lot. Ethan Hawke isn't one of the best. It's not one of the worst.
Sure.
You know? But that's going to get us right into our AMA question of the day. Which is, it's been submitted by Eben, excuse me if I...
Ebhin,
if I pronounce your name wrong. It's E_dog_95 on Twitter. And his question is, do you feel Ethan Hawke is one of the most underrated actors of his generation as he held his very... Do you feel he's one of the most underrated actors of his generation as he held his own throughout the film? Which is basically my thesis statement.
Well, a few things. So Hawke started filming Boyhood about... 3 years after this,
mm-hmm.
Every year that he would do a piece on that movie. Boyhood, to me, is the one when I saw it that I was like, this guy is just a fucking boss.
You love that movie.
I thought that movie was great.
Yeah.
Like, I think that movie's just great. I think Ethan Hawke is a really, really solid actor. I think he is very underrated. He's never been a guy that I think of as like a leading man that I would like really want to watch as a leading man in a movie, but
yeah.
He is a perfect supporting character. This is one of his better performances. When I said that earlier, it's not that I didn't think he did a great job. It's more like it doesn't stand out to me as the kind of role that gets nominated for supporting actor, I guess.
Yeah.
It's very subtle. It's like
if that performance was in a different movie without Denzel opposite him,
yeah.
It would have just completely been washed over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It got a lot of attention because Denzel, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's the new David Ayer movie starring Denzel. You have to see it. He's got this big, crazy performance as a crooked cop. You have to watch this movie because he
right.
had been passed over for the Oscar. He was full on gunning for awards at that point. You look at the trajectory of his career over the next 5-6 years.
He
we talked about this a lot.
Anymore. Yeah,
he literally wins for this movie, and then like his run, Man on Fire is like 2003. Then it's like mm-hmm. Out of Time. It's John Q. It's Antoine Fisher. It's The Book of Eli. You know, American Gangster's thrown in there, but for
he
the most
fun,
part,
it seems like
yeah, it's just, for the most part, it's The Equalizer. It's all these movies where you're just like you're getting a little older and you're just taking roles for fun. Two Guns. I mean,
I think his best performance is when he sits at that character between like Crimson Tide and Training Day.
Yeah.
You know, where he plays that guy in the middle, where he's pretty Denzel, but he's also kind of toned down a little
yeah,
bit. Yeah, you know?
Totally.
Do I feel Ethan Hawke is one of the most underrated? And guys, just to let you know, there was a lot of really, really great questions. I just felt like a lot of them were going to get touched on throughout the episode.
A lot of them were about Denzel performance stuff.
Yeah, and whether this movie's underrated or overrated and all that. And I figured we'd answer all of it throughout the show. This is the only one that I thought we might not touch on a lot. And it's such a tough question to answer because he does a lot of movies that are really bad. and in those movies, he's not very good in them.
Yep.
And like you said, he's a very good supporting character. So, yes, I think he is one of the most underrated actors of this generation because he does a good job and he fills great roles and he's got turned in great performances. But at the other side of that, I think he could also have just been completely forgotten about and just not worked at all over the last 16 years and no one would have cared, you know, like that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I think he's slightly underrated, but I think he's also had a fantastic run and that he should be very pleased with where he's at in Hollywood. Because he does not have that leading man charisma that we talk about.
Yeah, he's definitely missing a quality that would vault him up into A-list. He's been one of those guys where by name recognition at this point in body of work, he's sort of A-list.
Yeah, for sure.
But by like the roles you'd put him in, he's not really A-list. He's sort of more B.
I mean, here's a great question, guys. How many of you would be so excited to hear about a brand new Ethan Hawke movie? You know, starring Ethan Hawke, written, you know, directed by James Cameron or something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, you know. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move right on. Thank you again, Eben, for your question, and we're going to get right on to production development. Let's talk about your boy David Ayer here before we get you into Anton.
All right, so here you go. I got a question for you. When this movie came out, it was the first one where it was like, okay, crooked cop, bunch of like Hispanic gangsters in Los Angeles, and a bunch of drama that goes with the police department.
And the Russians are involved, yeah, as always.
That was the first time I had seen this plot line. And I'm going to name some movies for you. Okay, you got Training Day.
Mm-hmm.
You got Harsh Times.
Mm-hmm.
You got Street Kings. End of Watch. Dark Blue.
I'm so glad you said Street Kings.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I'm forgetting any. Those I'll name those five for now.
What was Mean Streets? Was that it? Was that one like... Oh, that's classic. Yeah, yeah.
That's Scorsese.
Yeah, yeah. That's a shame that I just
guess what those five movies have in common.
Please tell me.
Every single one of them is written or directed by David Ayer. Every single one.
Yes, I love it. Okay, so just let everyone know before the show, Ben's like, you know what David Ayer's written? Because this week Ben did writer and director and I did producers and the other stuff, and I was like, no. He's like, you know what, I'm just gonna wait for it on the show, I'm gonna tell you. And I'd completely forgotten about that moment until right now. Are you kidding me?
All five.
That is
unfucking real.
Unbelievable.
They're like this. It's like watching the same movie and caricatures and stereotypes and all these things where you're like, this movie's pretty close to being awesome, but it also has this sort of laughable quality of like really like cartoonish villains. And they're all Dark Blue, I would strike from the record a little because I think Dark Blue doesn't quite deal with the same parts of LA as much.
Right.
But the other four, Street Kings, Harsh Times, Training Day, and End of Watch, they're like the same fucking movie.
I'm so glad you said Street Kings. It makes me so happy.
He wrote, originally, he was a guy, he was like a script doctor guy, yeah, who worked on Fast and the Furious as a script doctor. He was in the Navy, and he took some of his like naval stuff that he learned while serving, and he was a script doctor on U-571. He did a draft of that movie, the submarine movie with Bon Jovi. and then after those films, he wrote the first draft of Training Day in 95, and he ended up finishing it once he got the inspiration with all the news with the Rampart investigations.
Oh, right.
At the time, there was a unit called CRASH, an acronym for something like Community Resources Against Something Hoodlums or something. That's what it stands for. And it was basically like an on the street, really at the lowest level, dealing with gangs in Los Angeles. Every department had a CRASH unit. So a lot of the CRASH officers were corrupt. That's what the Rampart investigations were about. And the guy that Denzel plays, he's the guy that ended up turning state's evidence and outed most of these guys when they caught him.
Okay.
Yeah, when they caught him, most of his testimony is what incriminated like 70 officers. Changed his name. Anyway, long story short, David Ayer. David Ayer got the inspiration to write this movie, and he is the only credited writer on the script.
Yes.
He even got a phone call from the president of Warner Brothers at the release of the film, congratulating him as being the only writer on the script. It's actually the chairman of Warner Brothers, but that's very rare. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, that's true. There's usually always a doctor, at least someone else, or a story, or characters, or something like that. Did you see that thing about how people were like grilling him for how unrealistic the movie was, and like Ethan Hawke doing drugs and all that?
Yeah.
He just held up a handbook about like being undercover and doing drugs.
Yeah, he like had all the facts and like references. So, Dark Blue, that was like his, I think his first. Was Dark Blue before? I think Dark Blue is 2000. So I think
Dark Blue.
That's Kurt Russell.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I recognize it.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one. But so then, yeah. Anyway, David Ayer, most recently, the thing you guys know him is that he just directed Suicide Squad. That's the big thing he just did.
Did you see that?
I still haven't seen it.
I still have not heard very good things.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah. I will see it. I should have seen
it
at this point.
I know. I really wanted to.
Yeah, so that's David Ayer's story. He wrote some other stuff as well. I mean, I would never call David Ayer bad because I think that there's a lot of success to what he's done. I just like those movies to me. Like, I actually think of those movies, the one that I enjoyed the most from a good movie standpoint is End of Watch. I actually think that movie's pretty good. I think, and Harsh Times has a really awesome performance from Christian Bale.
I hate Harsh Times.
I like Christian Bale
in
that movie.
It's really hard to watch for me.
I think Street Kings is pretty garbage.
Yes.
Dark Blue is entertaining, and this movie is super entertaining just because it's got
for
Denzel.
For me, this is his best for me.
Yeah. He also wrote SWAT.
Yeah. SWAT.
Just a gem. So anyway.
Where are his friends?
David Ayer?
Yeah.
They're
like, hey, dude, look, man, you've had a great run with this whole like LAPD cop thing.
Yeah, right.
Just try something else. Just try anything else.
Just try something else.
Genre.
Well, because he wrote the first ones, but then in a row he directed Street Kings, End of Watch, and Harsh Times. He directed all three. Harsh Times was his directorial debut.
My roommates in college just destroyed that. Like, that's, if we could talk about a horrible movie, that movie always came up.
Harsh Times?
Yeah. I don't know why. They just hated it so much. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the producers here a little bit. We got Jeffrey Silver and Bobby Neumeier, who they're actually two halves of a production company that ended up, forming. I'm still trying to get my voice back from the draft. It was called Outlaw Production. That was based off of Clint Eastwood, because they wanted to be like outlaw gunslingers, like risk takers with production. And you know what? They were actually really successful. Neumeier, when he decided he wanted to become a producer when he walked out of Steven Spielberg's E.T. He walked out and he's like, that's what I want to do for a living. And then he started working for Columbia Pictures. And then he became vice president of acquisitions there. And that's like right around the time that he started this production company with Jeffrey Silver. And they ended up working on a lot of movies together. They did like, you know, the Santa Clauses, the Terminators, Salvation. They did, Silver did Edge of Tomorrow. Not with Neumeier. Yeah, I figured you'd be pretty happy about that. But unfortunately, Bobby here, he passed away in 2005. He'd been having complications his whole life with asthma, and he was on set working on the film Breach, which was a part of their production company. And he was working out, and he had a heart attack, and he ended up passing away. But one thing that I actually really liked about him was that he was one of those guys, if you look at the movies that they did as a production company together, you would think that they're more just like trying to make money. They're not really like labor of love guys. But when he died, he was working on a film called Breach, like I said, and he was also working on Santa Claus 3 and Fat Girls, which I don't really know a lot about, other than that he had taken and liquidated basically all of his assets to pay for this movie.
Fat Girls?
Fat Girls.
Huh.
That no one has heard of, and I wanted to research it more, but I ran out of time. But he just kind of seemed like a cool dude. Like, if you go and you look at his whole filmography, he's just one of those guys, I think, he just did what he wanted to do.
Sounds
he just
like
wanted
it,
to make movies, and he stuck with franchises, and he just did the things that he wanted and that he thought would be successful.
Maybe we'll do Fat Girls on here one day if it comes out.
Yeah. Silver, on the other hand, he has produced over 30 films, grossing over $2.5 billion worldwide. He's still working now. He was the original producer of the first two seasons of The Wonder Years, which I thought was cool, and the pilot, and he is right now working on Ghost in the Shell, which is getting a lot of Ghost in the Shell, which is getting a lot of flack.
Yeah,
for putting Scarlett Johansson in the lead role and the live action Beauty and the Beast.
Yep, which looks to be pretty sweet. Ghost in the Shell will probably flop because it's a classic anime that people love, and it will probably be nothing like it. So
yeah, and it's starring a white chick, which is just, unfortunately, you just can't do that anymore.
Yeah, it's rough.
So let's get to your boy,
Antoine Fuqua. Okay, guys, if you watch or listen to the show, you know I've talked about Fuqua many times. It comes down to basically just this, and this is the movie that's the heart of all of it.
Yes,
Fuqua was a music video director in the 90s. Like, he directed music videos for like Prince, I think like Tony Braxton maybe, and
sounds right.
His first movie that he directed was The Replacement Killers. If you guys remember, it was that movie with Chow Yun-Fat. It was like around the time it was being marketed to like American audiences as though it was like this cool action movie. I remember seeing trailers for it on VHS and in theaters, like The Replacement Killers. Like, it was this big, Chow Yun-Fat was huge overseas, so
have you seen it? I think I've seen it once.
I saw Replacement Killers when I was a kid.
Okay.
Yeah, it's super unmemorable. I like remember almost nothing about it.
Right.
But that was his first movie, and I believe his second movie is this. He may have one film in the order before he does Training Day that I'm forgetting, like a movie that I haven't seen before. But Training Day, I think he does. Training Day is his third movie.
Okay.
After Training Day, he got sort of hailed as this guy that was like, oh, he's this really this visionary director. He just understands character and action. And like, if he was just talked about as this guy that was like a great action director,
like if he was talked about like Tony Scott,
yeah, but even Tony Scott, I still think has like style points that he doesn't have. If he was talked about as just like one of those directors that like a name that you would see on like a bunch of straight to video Wesley Snipes movies,
right?
Where like the movie's pretty entertaining,
or you know, even not even straight to video, even like just throwaway action movies.
The Art of War.
Yeah, you know, things that do go to theaters, they don't make a lot of money, and they're kind of forgotten about.
Yeah.
Like, if he makes movies in 30 years from now, what are they going to say?
Right. So the thing is, it's like Training Day comes out, and it's all this Oscar buzz because of Denzel. If you look at the things that he follows it up with, it becomes much more clear the kind of director he actually is.
Yeah.
Okay? He made that terrible King Arthur movie with Clive Owen. Mm-hmm. He followed this movie up with Tears of the Sun with Bruce Willis, yep. 2003. He ended up making Shooter with Mark Wahlberg and Danny Glover. He made The Equalizer, which is fucking sweet, but it's just
not a good movie.
Like a silly action movie. He made
Southpaw.
He made Southpaw, which was like an attempt at like a dramatic movie, but again, it was just like
I hated that movie.
Magnificent Seven comes out very soon, and I feel like I'm forgetting one other movie in there.
You're forgetting like one of the big ones in there, and anyway, keep going. Look it up.
Yeah, Steven, if you can actually throw the box office graphic up on the screen for us.
Oh, actually, it'll probably be in there.
We've got all of the movies listed there in box office. He's got one other pretty major movie that I feel like. Olympus Has Fallen.
Oh, Olympus, yeah,
which
yeah,
is
yeah.
totally, and Brooklyn's Finest. Jesus, they're all like just like above average to entertaining drama action. Like every one of them, and like Training Day gets looped into this category. Like it's a good movie, but it's like it's just a very entertaining movie, much in the same way that fucking Shooter is entertaining or Equalizer is entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that Bolt?
Bait.
Oh, Bait. Okay.
Bait was I think the movie that he did. No, that's the one that he did before. I'm pretty sure that's the movie that he did before Training Day.
Okay.
That I was forgetting.
Gotcha.
So, 2000, this year before.
Yeah, so he's not a good director. I mean, he's a...
I know, it's such a hard
designation
to give to someone.
Because he is a good director.
And we're an action movie show. So, like, it's not that we don't appreciate him fully. Like, he's directed more sweet movies we'll do on the show...
Oh, absolutely.
...than almost anyone on the whole show. We're going to end up having done probably five of his movies by the end of this.
Right. The only other people that are even in that conversation are, like, Tony Scott and, like, James Cameron.
There's, like, a few guys.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, we will do five of his movies.
And he's so good at what he does, but... he's always going to be known as the director of the Academy Award winning Training Day. That's what I was trying to get at earlier. Is if he's making movies in 30, 40 years from now, somehow he's like 100, that's what they'll still say.
Yeah.
And I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Unless we get proved wrong and he directs something that's just like masterful.
But that's what Southpaw was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Southpaw was supposed to be masterful.
Yeah. It was supposed to be really good. So that is my appraisal of Antoine Fuqua. Now that we've done this movie, we've gotten it off our backs. I forgot to read this part. We were talking about the script, something I wanted to mention.
Okay.
The original ending of the script was Hoyt crashing the pad of Alonzo's girlfriend and finding his training officer in the middle of an orgy with two young women. Hoyt shows him the money that Smiley was supposed to deliver to the Russians and tells him that there's a crew of hitmen looking all over for him. Alonzo then commits suicide in front of Hoyt. Like, would it have been a better movie?
I don't think so.
I actually think that what would have made this movie the best movie ever would have been Hoyt dying in the bathtub. I think that would have been way better. I think if he had died in the bathtub and then Denzel had died and that's the movie.
But then no one would have stopped Denzel.
Yeah, Denzel still like...
Because he had all the money to meet the Russians, but Hawk took it. So if Hawk dies in the tub, then he gets away.
Okay, so then Denzel doesn't die.
And you're just happy with that.
Yeah. He still gets to deliver his King Kong ain't got shit on me speech. You can just change that somehow.
Just change it up.
Yeah, somehow. I don't know. I mean, I think that one of the biggest faults of this movie is how it ends. I think it's crappy that Ethan Hawke like coincidentally
survives.
I think that's such a dumb plot point.
Right.
And that like, and then he like fights Denzel, and then Denzel doesn't kill him on the roof. Why doesn't he just kill him? That's another one that doesn't make any sense.
There's a couple. I mean, there's a. There's that weird thing, like, so much of this movie is based off of Denzel playing Ethan Hawke as a fool.
Yeah.
But then there also is that thing, and I think if they played it up a little bit more, that the reason that Ethan Hawke wins is because Denzel is so endeared by his Boy Scout, Boy Scout mentality
yeah.
that it reminded him of being a kid, of being a rookie.
Yeah.
I think if they would have touched on that more, then the whole thing would have made a little more sense to why he didn't kill Ethan Hawke a couple times, numerous times.
He's, I mean, they're shooting at each other in the house.
Look, dude, he just capped a guy sitting in a chair with a shotgun.
Yeah.
You can easily kill Ethan Hawke right there if you want to. You can. And all of them wanted him to. And they kept saying, he's like, no, he's got that look in his eye. You know, he's something special. He's something like... If there's no means to the patronizing
yeah.
and all that, then it just comes off as lame.
Yeah.
And, you know,
agreed.
Genuine.
And also Dr. Dre is not particularly convincing.
He's not a very good actor.
As Smiley.
All right. I'm going to move right into critical and box office here. This was, what, his third most successful or something like that? Second?
I think we had King Arthur as the number one worldwide, and I think right. this looked like this was four.
So this was produced by Warner Brothers. It was... only $45 million to make, which makes sense. They didn't have anything crazy going on. It opened October 5th in 2000. It made $76 million domestically, $28 worldwide for a grotal, a toast. Wow.
Toast grotal?
Toast grotal. What is going on with me today? A total gross of $104.5 million. And it opened at number one at $22.5 million. It's got a 7.7 from IMDb, which is... I think it is a little high, actually. I think when you said 7.1 or 7.2, that feels more correct.
Yeah, I would have just guessed like just over 7. I mean, it's reflected in the Rotten Tomatoes at 72 and 69
mm-hmm.
for top critics, all critics. It does reflect our audience at 89.
It does.
Which makes sense. I do find it kind of fascinating that worldwide this movie only made $104 million. It's just that same conversation we keep having about Denzel movies just not making money. It's weird.
It really is, because we find... overseas, our superstars, they love Brad Pitt movies. They love Tom Cruise movies, you know?
Yeah.
Why don't they love Denzel movies? It makes no sense. The dude's been famous my whole life.
I mean, and they, to some degree, they do now more than they used to, which is why, like, Safe yeah. House and The Equalizer have played so well, is because their VOD audiences internationally have been great. And that's why they're getting sequels.
I just don't understand why it's taken him so long and, like, moving into this weird part of his career to... not bad movies, but not great movies.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that he's, like, sort of... like, he is still capable, because he's, like, 64 now or something?
Gotta be, yeah.
63. Like, Denzel's still capable, in my mind, of, like, pulling off... he's got 5 to 10 more years, I think, of being able to pull off characters in their, like, 50s.
Yeah.
Like, I think he can do it. And so I think there's a decent shot that Denzel will take one more crack in an Oscar role.
I hope so. I hope that towards the end of that run of playing in his 50s that he embraces playing the older man too. Like, I mean, Morgan Freeman has been playing that character for like 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, that like, I mean, we always say the noble savage, but he's just always been, you know, older than Denzel.
Yeah.
I would love to see Denzel in his like 60s and 70s win an Oscar.
Yeah.
It would be so awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, if he stays healthy, like he'll be able to really, really go after it for like another decade.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he will. I got a good top five for us this week,
okay.
I think. So you were just talking about the end of the movie and how you thought it should have been different, where I think the end of the movie is sweet. I love that, like, 2,000 bullets get put into Denzel
yeah.
Washington.
Yeah.
So I want to go with you.
And he gets back up.
And he gets back up. The top five villain deaths in movies covered on our show.
Okay. I think we both have an easy number one there.
I think we both do. It's got to be General Hummel.
Hummel from The Rock.
Oh, the slow-mo.
Yeah, it's been the greatest honor of my life to serve with you, General. But like you said, it's over.
It's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so sweet.
John
C. McGinley, Bokeem Woodbine.
It's just an all-star
Tony
cast.
Tony Todd, the guy with the part in his hair whose name I can't remember.
I know. We can never remember the shitweasel's name.
Yeah, we can never fucking remember
We've
his
looked
name.
It up 50 times.
Wait. Spur...
I was just saying Greg, Michael.
Greg Spur something.
He's just like... I mean, he's not watching, but if he was watching...
All right. Spurlator. Spurlator.
That's Greg Spurlator.
Yeah, I believe that's his name.
All right. All right, so what's your number two? We don't have to go in any specific order on this.
I'll go with my number two as Bodie from Point Break.
Oh, of course.
I've been to every city in Mexico. Found an unclaimed piece of meat in Baja. Turned out to be Rosie. But I knew you wouldn't miss this, Bodie. And then he cuffs him.
Yep.
And he's like, so... it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, man. Look at it, Johnny.
Look at it!
Look at it!
It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, man. Just like, let me get one wave before you take me. Just one wave, compadre.
He's not coming back.
There's cliffs on both sides. I'm not going to paddle to New Zealand. He's not coming back. When he just dies in the waves. Ah!
100-foot wave. 100-foot wave, man.
Favorite movie of all time for a reason.
I'm going to go with my favorite movie of all time for a reason. You love my father, I know, but I loved him too. Commodus, Gladiator, the biggest bitch in movie history.
Yeah.
Gets stabbed with his own dagger that he's hiding in the throat while he's holding it.
Yeah, slow.
Slow. You hear the...
Is it more or less satisfying than the made by Mel Gibson as he kills the guy with the hatchet?
Oh, I know. Nothing's as satisfying as the Mel Gibson. All right, that's my number two. What do you got?
I will go number three with a little character I like to call Ryder in The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Oh my god, you did not just go to fucking Taking of Pelham.
When Travolta's like, you're gonna have to do it. You're gonna have to kill me. You're gonna have to fucking shoot me.
Oh yeah.
And then he shoots him and he's like, you're my goddamn hero.
Goddamn
man.
Hero, Garver.
Yeah.
Oh, that is actually a pretty sweet.
It's good,
death.
Right?
It's a good one.
You're a goddamn hero.
Alright, so I'm gonna have to go with
Garver. You were thinking about Garver?
I would never think about Garver. I was thinking about Looper. And it's that little speech he gives, he's like, and then I saw it. The circle, you know, the man that would kill for his wife, the woman that would die for her child, and the child that would, you know, that thing. And then he just turns around and he shoots himself.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy shit. No. No, 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 no. And then Bruce Willis starts to fade away.
Right.
And I think it's one of the most poetic deaths that a leading man and a villain have had in a movie.
Do you think that, you know how there's the, like, you hear that, like, line, and it's from an adaptation, but the people say it in real life, too, that voiceover is, like, lazy writing? That in that, if you think about, like, it's the same way with David Mamet says that thing about, like, it should be about what's happening in the scene, not talking about what's going to happen.
Right.
Like, really purist writers feel that way. Something like that, where he's like, and then I saw it, and he, like lays it all out.
Right.
In some ways, that's, like, kind of sloppy, because you don't actually need it. You could just literally have, like, the pause.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, they talk about that in improv all the time. Don't talk about what you're going to do. Just do it.
Yeah.
Don't talk about your joke. Just do the joke or whatever, and your audience is smart enough to know.
Yeah, don't explain it in the voiceover. Yeah, just have the scene happen.
That is an interesting point that you take there.
I mean, I don't think it takes away from the death. It's still a good death.
No, I don't think so either. I am curious, though, as if the movie would be better if he didn't do that. Because he does have he has voiceover in parts of the movie. Both of them do, but yeah. I don't know.
Number four is going to be the death of Bart the Bear in The Edge.
Can't kill the bear, Charles.
And they do kill the bear. When they fucking hoist Bart the Bear up on the spear. In the most unrealistic...
A decrepit, like, hypothermia...
Yeah,
Anthony Hopkins.
They kill the bear, and they become savages. For those of you that haven't watched The Edge, watch The Edge. It's the best movie.
Yeah, and you need to watch the episode of The Edge. It's really important. Next, I'm going to go Jeremy Renner in The Town.
Oh, The Town. That's a good one.
It's interesting because he's not really the bad guy, but he kind of is.
Right.
Like, John Hamm is more the bad guy, but he's also... He's the Gerard, you know, of that movie. So Jeremy Renner's, like, where all the negative parts come from. Just the reach over to the soda after he got shot in the back of the leg.
That's one of my favorites.
Just tell how he's just thirsty, he's dehydrated, and he turns. Yeah. He's like, "All right, I'm coming. I surrender. I surrender." And then he just gets pop, and the shot to the face, the cheek, and the head. Oh,
yeah, the cheek shot was a good one.
It's brutal.
It's
the makeup is fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah, just a great death.
I was gonna go with something a little more serious, but I'm actually gonna go with. Hey, Bennett, let off some steam.
Hey, Bennett.
Let off some steam, Bennett. Where Schwarzenegger throws the pipe through Bennett. And Bennett, there's steam coming out of him. And Bennett.
You didn't remember.
Yeah.
What was your more serious one? I'm so curious.
I was probably going to go with the T-1000 after he gets blown into 1,000 pieces and then he reforms and he gets knocked, like, shot with the shotgun. He gets shot by Schwarzenegger or from Linda Hamilton? He gets shot by Schwarzenegger, right? I'm trying to remember if Schwarzenegger...
She shoots him a bunch, and then
Schwarzenegger.
Like, walks back, and then he shoots him with the grenade coming over the thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that movie.
That movie's fucking awesome.
It's so good.
Terminator 2 is great. And then he falls backwards into the vat of liquid metal, and all the faces of the people that he's become. It's like a Shang Tsung moment.
Yeah, it's a total Shang Tsung moment. Yeah. My last one is going to have to be... It's got to be Agent Smith from the original The Matrix,
because
when
really
he goes in him and the things coming through his skin, and then the one that goes over his eyes, my favorite, and then he explodes.
Yeah.
All right, so that's our top five, guys. If you have a great top five of your favorite villain deaths, let us know at AMA Podcast. Just hashtag top five deaths.
Yeah, top five deaths. Let us know what you think the greatest five deaths we've done are. Let's move into favorite line.
Let's do it.
Let's get into favorite line.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to think, there's a lot of lines. Denzel has all of them.
I don't care about King Kong Ain't Got Shit On Me anymore.
No, it's like a good line.
Yeah.
Like, it's entertaining, but it felt like a cop-out to go with it.
Yeah.
I think my favorite line is when Denzel's giving Ethan Hawke shit about his wife, and he's like, I bet you guys still lick each other in the eyes when you fuck each other, don't you? He says something like that. It's just like...
I'd rather not talk about my wife.
It's like such a... Again, it's like a parody. It feels like an SNL sketch.
You know what is a real fucking parody of that whole thing? Is all that talk, and then he goes home and his wife is Eva Mendes.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Yeah.
She's so hot.
Wait, it's not his wife, though.
Yeah, well, not really.
It's his mistress, right?
Yeah. It's his mistress and his boy.
My wife is not hot. She's cute.
She's cute.
Ava Mendez pretty much looked identical between 2001 and 2010, by the way. She looked like...
love with her.
She hadn't aged a day between Training Day and the other guys.
I'm in love with her.
Yeah, I love Ava Mendez.
I've got a few in here. So one of them is that didn't know you liked to get wet, though. Butt naked. Ill. Term. Dust, because me and my buddies used to say that to each other in college.
Like,
no, you're at a party and you're like a little drunker than you want to be, and you're kind of like, oh, man, I need to get out of here.
Yeah,
how you feeling? And they just kind of looked at you and they're like, didn't know you like to get wet though. You're like, ah, oh, shit, I gotta get out of here. But my favorite line was, "You don't know what you're talking about. They built prisons because of me. Judges have given out over 15,000 man years of incarceration time due to my investigations."
Is it 15,000 or is it like 250,000 or
something? 15,000 years, I'm pretty sure. I rewound it.
Okay.
Because I just love... because you hadn't really gotten a qualifier of like why he was such a badass.
Yeah, right.
But then you hear that real quick. They built prisons because of me. You're like, all right, okay, cool, here it is.
Giving yourself your own qualifier.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
I mean, this movie is definitely missing some stuff that would turn into full-scale ridiculousness. Like if somebody was like, you're working with the toughest cop on the force. Alonzo Harris.
He wears 5 pounds of gold around his neck.
23 years in the field.
He's never shot a gun straight, and he's killed 7,000 people.
Average number of bullets shot in a single sequence, 27.
He's got more Dr. Dre downloads on LimeWire than anyone I've ever met.
He knows every word to both Chronic and Chronic 2001. Dr. Dre is his underling, for fuck's sake.
All right. I think that's a good segue into exactly what we're talking about next, which is our categories.
Which three? So there's three action movie categories, guys. If you listen to or watch the show, you know there are totally ridiculous movies like Con Air and Face Off that just fall apart because they're so silly.
Mm-hmm.
There are totally legitimate movies like The Fugitive, Terminator 2, where they're just really grounded with legitimate stuff and they don't make you laugh unintentionally and they're just very solid.
Yeah.
And then there are movies in the middle that are ridiculously legitimate, which are just sort of silly and you laugh unintentionally at times. But ultimately, they're held together by a really good performance or something about it really keeps you engaged. Those are like The Rock or Point Break.
Predator, Speed. Those are great movies, yeah.
For me, I think a lot of people would say this is a totally legitimate movie.
I think
the normal narrative. I'm going to go, though, ridiculously legitimate. I just found myself laughing at many moments in this movie.
Yeah, it's really tough because... You know what? I don't even need to try to legitimize myself because there is that feeling that you get when you watch a movie. And this movie is ridiculously legitimate. I don't know why exactly it's not totally legit.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's just a little too... It's a little too old, maybe. Maybe that's what it is.
It's a little dated, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like some of the stereotypes and the music and just Denzel, the way he acts. A lot of it doesn't feel as real as I want it to be.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ridiculous legitimate, which is a great category to be in.
Yeah, it's funny how things that they go from being dated to swinging back around and being sexy if they were kind of sexy in their time.
Right.
It's like the 60s and 70s kind of gets to be that way. This sort of like really, really low income, lots of crime, tons and tons of tatted up, like just like tons of Hispanic stereotypes and like gold
and black
chains and shit.
Stereotypes and everything. Yeah.
It's like not really sexy. It wasn't really at the time. It was just kind of. It's like this
at the time, I think, for us, and again, this is speaking of two guys that basically grew up as white kids in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
So like I don't know what that was like for people growing up in Los Angeles watching that.
Yeah.
If even at the time for them, they were kind of like, this is not real life. Because for us, it was, for me, I'm not going to speak for you. For me, it was kind of like a look into the world that I didn't understand.
Right.
And this seems so real and, you know.
And I'm sure, like, that's the thing. I'm sure a lot of it was like that. I'm sure it seems like caricatures to us, though in real life, the reason that David Ayer has made these movies and written these movies is that there is so much of that. It's like, it's a lot closer to reality than we probably realize. It's still very, very difficult to take seriously when it's like, so dramatized and so over the top, and so many of the extra characters, like the tertiary characters that end up all his guys, it's like, but Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, you have like, I mean, Scott Glenn is good, but then you have like the guys in his unit, it's the one
bad guy from The Mask, you got Billy,
Billy, I was just admiring your cage.
Yeah, from Con Air.
Yeah, it's, he's one of the guys. Like, there's so many characters like that where you're just like Macy Gray is in it. Like,
yeah, what? No one likes her.
So much of this movie feels like just like sort of like roll of your eyes, silly.
Yeah, exactly. That's yeah. You kind of roll your eyes a little bit. That's what it is. So that's the category I think it should fall into for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. So guys, we aren't going to pitch a new movie this week. Though if we were going to, the segment would be called The Pitch. Yeah, I just wanted to get it in there for good measure.
I just like making that sound.
What you guys should do, though, is go find us on Twitter at AMA Podcast. We put up a poll from last week's episode. Last week we covered 5 to 10 minutes on 8 movies that we didn't think we could do on AMA, but we always wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We put up a poll, a bracket system. So four.
Dude, there
of
was
those,
like almost 1,000 votes.
Yeah, it was great.
That
people
was
were,
so cool.
People were really excited. So yeah. I think the four winners that came out of round one
mm-hmm.
were The Shawshank Redemption.
Yep.
The Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yep.
The Other Guys.
I don't know how that beat Sunshine.
And The Weatherman. No, The Truman Show.
Truman Show, yeah.
So we have The Other Guys, The Truman Show, Lord of the Rings trilogy, and Shawshank Redemption, which I think we will end up putting...
We'll split Shawshank and Lord of the Rings.
Which pretty much is just a guarantee. I don't even know. We don't even like need to run the numbers. But we'll put up Truman Show and Other Guys against mm-hmm. those just in case. So go find on at AMA Podcast to vote, because in the end, the movie that wins that whole entire bracket, we are going to do on the show. And we may do the runner-up as well.
We may. It depends on, which one it is. And then also to add on to the pitch, guys, a couple weeks ago I talked to you about Rachel Brooke Smith. She's an actress, a model, entrepreneur. She's still interested in coming on the show, and we're still interested in having her on the show. But we're busy. It's tough. I think next week is, it might happen. If not, it should be the week after that. But we'll keep you guys posted.
Yep.
And we'll post the movie as soon as we find out which one it is.
Absolutely, guys. So thank you so much for watching the show. We had a great time as always. And we will see you same time, same place next week.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.